From Wondery, this is Business Wars. I'm your host, David Brown. Behind every successful business, there's always a hard-fought war that the public rarely gets to see up close. In Business Wars, we're going to be delving into the most iconic and fascinating battles among rivals, like McDonald's versus Burger King, Nike versus Adidas, or Coke versus Pepsi. Others may be less well-known, but they'll be just as dramatic. You'll get a close, inside look into the dynamic, sometimes commanding and cunning entrepreneurs who drive these companies. We'll learn about the strategies these business titans use to trump their rivals. Today, we take you to the front lines with an 8-episode series on the battle between Netflix and Blockbuster, and eventually HBO. It was a war. It lasted 8 grueling years. It left behind casualties, thousands of hollowed-out buildings, and economic losses in the billions. Maybe you or your parents remember those times back in the 90s when you'd get that itch for a movie and hop into your car, turn on the radio, head out for Blockbuster. You remember you pick out your VHS or DVD and stand in line trying to ignore all the popcorn and candy at every turn. If you were lucky, they actually had the movie you came for. But often, you left with a second or third choice, and a lot of times, the rental fees turned out to be just a down payment, because all too often, there were hefty late fees, too. Around 1997, along came a guy named Mark Randolph. He was a Silicon Valley marketing wizard with a mind like a wearing blender. And he had a mathematician friend named Reed Hastings, real forward-thinking guy, computer programmer. Well, Randolph and Hastings came up with a whole new model for distributing movies to consumers. When Reed and Mark came up with Netflix, they knew they'd have to take on the mother of all movie rental chains, Blockbuster. What they didn't know, what they didn't even see coming, was that eventually their business model would upend network television too and change the entire movie industry. Bottom line, if you like lots of movie choices at the touch of your remote or your smartphone screen, truth is, you can thank Hastings and Randolph. Writer Gina Keating takes us to the moment when the possibility of all this crystallized. We get support from Airbnb. Staying in an Airbnb is often one of my favorite parts of a trip, especially on business travel. Instead of slogging to another hotel and waiting in line after you've been driving or flying all day, there is nothing better than landing in a place that, well, really feels like a home away from home. Maybe you've stayed in an Airbnb before and thought to yourself, you know, this actually seems pretty doable. Maybe my place could be an Airbnb. Well, I'm here to tell you it could be. You could be sitting on an Airbnb and not even know it. It might be as simple as starting with your spare room, or maybe even your whole place when you're away. Say you and your family are headed away for a much-deserved spring break. Well, why not Airbnb your place and make some extra money towards the trip? Win-win. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
From Wondery, this is Business Wars. I'm David Brown. It was January 2007, Park City, Utah. The place was packed with independent filmmakers hoping to find distributors at the Sundance Film Festival. John Antiocco, the CEO of Blockbuster, peered out the windshield of his rented Cadillac Escalade at the ski chalets stacked up the mountainside. Antiaco was then in his late 50s, with a wreath of salt and pepper hair and an aquiline nose that made him look like a short boxer or a Roman emperor. He can't remember what he wore that Sunday afternoon, but he favored plain starched white shirts, open-necked with a blue blazer and slacks. His mood was confident, exultant even, but he didn't want to get too far ahead of himself. The street was packed with impatient drivers, and he was looking for a house number. The Escalade's wheels crunched slowly over the snow-packed streets. Antiaco didn't want to be late for his meeting, but he also didn't want to maim one of the hipsters in designer boots and winter gear slipping and sliding alongside his car. They were all trying to get to the glitzy parties and film premieres on Main Street. The Sundance Festival that attracted all these L.A. types wasn't really Antiaco's thing. He preferred to spend his free weekends at his ranch outside Dallas, puttering, putting up deer feeders, inspecting fences, watching his wife, Lisa, ride her prize Arabian show horse. Every few months, he visited New York to hang with pals from his old neighborhood. They'd spend hours in chic restaurants they couldn't afford in their salad days. Nick Shepard, his high-strung but loyal chief operating officer and right-hand man at Blockbuster, had convinced him to attend this festival as a sort of victory lap. They had found the formula to kill Netflix. Dead. Once and for all. And then, as he and Nick drank coffee in an overcrowded cafe and gazed out at the cloud-shrouded mountains, Nick's cell phone rang. It was Hastings from Netflix. He had an offer in mind for Antiaco, an offer he said that Antiaco would be a fool to refuse. Ironically, it wasn't just Hastings who thought he was holding the winning hand. Antiaco was convinced it was he that held the ace. In truth, they were both close to folding. But Hastings, the founder of Netflix, could not fathom how Blockbuster could replicate the complex, intuitive online user interface that he and his co-founder, Mark Randolph, had slaved over for 7 years. But Blockbuster's Antiaco thought he had done just that thing. Here's how Antiaco remembers that call from Netflix's Hastings.
Hey, John, I heard you might be in town for Sundance this year. As a matter of fact, I am. Well, listen, maybe we should get together and talk. I'm going to be in my chalet in Park City all day long. How does lunchtime today work for you? Sounds like a good idea.
When he hung up, Antiaco said with a slight sneer, "Of course, a chalet in Park City." Antiaco and his Blockbuster team were at Sundance to place their orders for the latest DVD releases, and while schmoozing, he picked up a piece of intelligence. Word was, Netflix was not doing well. Possibly on the ropes, in fact. Hastings sat alone in his chalet, waiting as the gray day warmed a bit and the voices of festival-goers echoed along the street outside. He loved Park City's quaint little town with its clock tower, swank shops, and an old-fashioned theater marquee. He'd bought an old red brick meeting house with a steeple and stained glass windows and converted it into a vacation home. Here, he and his wife Patty and their two children, now in middle school, could escape from overheated, tech-obsessed Silicon Valley to ski, hang out during school breaks, that sort of thing. He hoped that the family trips made up for all the time that Netflix had sucked away. Hastings stayed home in Santa Cruz in Northern California when Patty took the kids to Italy for a study abroad year. Meanwhile, back in Wall Street,
Blockbuster rolls out its online rental service, a new challenge to already struggling Netflix.
When word came out about Blockbuster Online, Hastings opened his laptop to take a look. He shook his head and chuckled to himself. Wow, this is a shaggy dog of a website. I can do better than this sitting at any cafe in the world just using my laptop. But he had underestimated Antiaco. Or maybe he had overestimated his own hand. In truth, they had both miscalculated. The search for each other's jugular would become an acquired taste. Hastings had worked obsessively on the code for Netflix's powerful algorithms that tracked web visitors' every movement and preference, amassing an unmatched treasure trove of information. Despite the supremacy of this powerful data-sucking engine, Hastings would eventually learn that Netflix was a shakier vessel than he realized. His co-founder, Mark Randolph, had described the struggle to keep Netflix alive as pissing blood for years. Hastings paced the house alone, waiting for Antiocho. Whether the Netflix gurus had struggled for nothing hinged on the outcome of this meeting. First, he would get Antiocho to admit what Netflix's data showed, that Blockbuster was going broke trying to kill Netflix with its new Total Access program. See, Total Access let Blockbuster online subscribers return their DVDs to any of Blockbuster's 7,000 American stores and rent a new movie immediately. Netflix just couldn't match that kind of convenience. But Hastings knew Antiocho's pressure point. Actually, Blockbuster was losing money on every transaction. The big chain was already $1 billion in debt. And Antiocho's board of directors, led by billionaire investor Carl Icahn, they were yanking on the reins. Hastings had to swallow his pride and beg Antiocho to sell him Blockbuster Online, or both companies would die in a slow murder-suicide. Surely Antiocho would get this. But if Antiocho refused and Total Access continued, well, Hastings would have to report Netflix's first-ever loss of subscribers. Netflix stock price would start melting down along with its equity. By the second quarter of no growth, Netflix would be finished. The company's share price would collapse along with its ability to borrow money to sustain operations, unless, well, Blockbuster went belly up first from its debt. And so, as he waited for Antiocho to arrive, Hastings reflected on the fact that he had repeatedly and publicly dismissed Blockbuster as technologically inept. He wished he hadn't said that. Most people who know Hastings well say that he is a genius and visionary. They also say he does not comprehend people all that well, especially when they act in ways that he considers illogical. And that's how he came to underestimate John Antiocho and the boys at Blockbuster Online. They were illogical. Antiocho spotted Hastings' chalet and pulled up to the curb. Antiocho took a few moments to savor his vindication, the sheer arrogance of Hastings. "You didn't think we could figure this online thing out, did you, Reed?" Warmed by the heated seat, he paused and listened to the engine tick as it cooled. Then he put on his game face, walked up the snowy sidewalk to the wide wooden porch, and raised his fist. John Antiocho had been through 2 years of hell. He had waited for 7 years for Viacom to split off Blockbuster as a public company in 2004 so he could run it the way he wanted. Video stores were dying and Antiocho knew it. Once Viacom cut him loose, he needed to catch Netflix, reduce the number of video rental stores and late fees, and move into digital delivery before the $8 billion industry shrank to nothing. To do all that, he desperately needed control of the $6 billion that Blockbuster generated every year. But Blockbuster's overlord, Viacom, extracted a $5 per share special dividend. Only after Viacom sucked the life out of Blockbuster did it spin off in late 2004, leaving Blockbuster with $1.2 billion in debt.
Corporate raider Carl Icahn sets his sights on Blockbuster. The question is whether he can actually wring profit out of this struggling movie rental company.
Antiocho wasn't too worried about the debt until a few months later. when his bid to take over Hollywood Video caught the attention of billionaire hedge fund investor Carl Icahn. Now, Icahn had a reputation for buying stock in companies that he considered undervalued and ruthlessly forcing management to cut costs, sell assets, or buy back their stock at inflated prices. This ensured investors of quick and substantial profits, but often left his target companies mortally wounded. Antiocho had tried to take over Hollywood Video 5 years earlier, but ran into problems with federal antitrust regulators. This time, he figured that competition from Netflix and Video on Demand would make his $700 million bid for Hollywood Video look less anti-competitive and more like an attempt to consolidate a dying industry. After all, video store rentals were plummeting. Everyone knew that. At one time, there were something like 70,000 video stores, and by 2005, almost 80% of them were gone. Customers simply had more choices: video on demand, Netflix, and cheap DVDs. Antiocho wanted to close the underperforming stores to boost sales at the healthy stores. That would give him cash to invest the hundreds of millions it would now take to catch Netflix. Then Icahn set his sights on Blockbuster. As soon as Antiocho met with Icahn, he knew he was in trouble. Icahn's opening salvo made Antiocho's hackles rise. "You make too much money," he says. Icahn planned to quickly profit on both ends of the deal. Hollywood Video stockholders would get a premium price to sell their shares. Blockbuster's stock would bump up in value just because Icahn was on the scene, agitating management to squeeze more money out of the deal for investors. So Icahn bought $150 million worth of Blockbuster stock and $60 million in Hollywood Video shares, then sat back and waited for Antiocho to buy Hollywood Video. But the Federal Trade Commission had not warmed to the merger, and there was a player in the wings no one was laying big odds on. Number three video rental chain Movie Gallery, which offered $1.1 billion for Hollywood Video. Antiocho had no choice. He had to drop out. With a company already deep in debt, he just didn't have the money to make a counteroffer. Icahn was furious. The 69-year-old Queens native had made his name as a cutthroat corporate raider in the 1980s, alongside corporate insider trading felons Michael Milken and Ivan Boesky. The walls of his office in the General Motors building in Manhattan were lined with framed newspaper clippings and photos, like so many hunted trophy heads of business titans and companies he had taken down over the years. They included the former executives of Nabisco, Texaco, Revlon, Time Warner, Motorola, Marshall Fields, Phillips Petroleum, and Trans World Airlines.
Carl Icahn fails to get the Blockbuster deal he wanted, and now the movie rental company is struggling to stay afloat.
Icahn was now stuck with Blockbuster, and he was furious. He angrily called up Antiocho and demanded that Blockbuster either find a private buyer or pay him a special dividend totaling over $300 million. Antiocho coolly refused. So Icahn demanded a shareholder vote to put himself and two hand-picked associates on the Blockbuster board. But if Icahn hoped to shake up Antiocho, he'd find out soon enough he'd tangled with the wrong guy. Instead of scaring Antiocho, the threats made him dig in harder. See, Antiocho grew up the son of a milkman in a tough Brooklyn neighborhood. He knew how to deal with bullies. He sized up Icahn and figured he could take him.
Let's face it, after a night with drinks, it can be hard to bounce back the next morning. But let me tell you, if there's a surefire way to wake up feeling fresh after a night of drinking, it's with ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for that rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. I have a friend who had to go to a major conference the night before. Well, you know how these pre-conference cocktail sessions can go. But he cracked open a bottle of ZBiotics before that first drink. The next day, he got up feeling ready to give that presentation his 100%. Head on over to ZBiotics.com/BW to get 15% off your first order when you use BW at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/BW and make sure to use the code BW at checkout for 15% off. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
Icon mounted a vicious proxy battle to wrest control of Blockbuster from Antiocho. He fired off public letters to shareholders, painting Antiocho as a greedy spendthrift who got an unconscionable $51 million in pay, but had no solid plan to pay down Blockbuster's debt or fix its drowning stores. Icon urged Blockbuster stockholders to put him and two cronies on the Blockbuster board and throw Antiocho off. On May 11, 2005, shareholders did just that. But Antiocho turned the tables. He had a clause in his contract that gave him a $54 million payout if he was kicked off the Blockbuster board. He threatened to activate it. Icon had no choice but to create a new board seat for his hated rival. Then Icon began a campaign of what amounted to psychological warfare aimed at forcing Antiocho to quit. If the Blockbuster CEO left voluntarily, he'd have to bail without his $54 million parachute. At every opportunity, Icon tried to publicly humiliate Antiocho and make his life difficult. Icon demanded that board meetings be held at his Manhattan office, far from Antiocho's Dallas headquarters. At those meetings, he pushed aside Antiocho, Blockbuster's chairman, saying he would now preside over meetings. Icon seemed to take pleasure in letting Antiocho's proposals die from neglect. Even more mortifying to Antiocho and his team, Icon insisted that his 26-year-old son, Brett, an aspiring filmmaker, weigh in on any of Antiocho's business plans. Icon called Antiocho at his office after hours for long-winded discussions about Blockbuster business. When Antiocho stopped taking the calls, Icon complained that Antiocho spent more time drinking tequila on his ranch than running the business. Reed Hastings, over at Netflix, watched it all with wary glee. As long as Icon and Antiocho fought with each other, Blockbuster would not beat Netflix. Hastings followed Icon's lead, deriding Antiocho publicly. When Antiocho announced plans for Blockbuster Online, Hastings practically yawned. Blockbuster's track record in online technology and marketing is less well-developed, he told a reporter, and then added dismissively, we find it unlikely that Blockbuster will promote their online service effectively. That was the PR equivalent of a mic drop. Antiocho found Hastings insufferable. And then it got worse. For 2 years, Netflix grew almost unchallenged, from 2 million subscribers in 2004 to 6 million at the end of 2006. Blockbuster stalled at just about 1 million subscribers as it struggled with debt and technology problems. In truth, both companies were operating on a razor's edge. Marketing dollars are the lifeblood of subscription businesses, and Netflix and Blockbuster were pouring hundreds of millions into a grab for new subscribers. They cut their prices, bought ads, did deals for exclusive content, anything to set themselves apart from each other. They treated it as a battle to the death because no one knew yet whether there were enough customers to sustain two online rental companies. Then, Blockbuster's total access stopped Netflix in its tracks. Somehow, Antiocho managed to win over Icon with the ridiculously expensive total access that allowed customers to drop off movies rented online and pick up movies in a Blockbuster store. And that collaboration made them dangerous, Hastings thought, as he waited for Antiocho to arrive at his snowbound chalet. In just 6 weeks, Total Access had nearly doubled Blockbuster's subscriber account to 2 million. Hastings had to stop Total Access, whatever it took. A sharp knock shook Hastings out of his reverie. He met Antiocho at the door of the red brick meeting house and settled him in the living room with a beverage. The two men sat, a study in contrasts. Hastings, tall and lean, wore a goatee. He was a rumpled nerd with a sharp mind, but he was short on emotional intelligence with a tendency to blurt out painful truths. Antiocho, neat and stocky, was a charming storyteller with the patience and reserve of a high-stakes poker player. He was watching Hastings carefully. He waited for Hastings to come to the point. Hastings began awkwardly.
John, congratulations on Total Access. It's a great program. I wish now I'd taken your team a little bit more seriously, but John, we are going to have a serious problem next quarter with subscriber growth if you keep this stuff up. I'm sure you guessed that, right?
The word from the studios is you're losing subscribers as fast as we're picking them up, Reed.
But you are giving away those store rentals. We figure that's got to be costing you, what, $2 per rental? Pretty soon, you're going to be spinning yourself right into oblivion. You guys are going to be bankrupt. The minute you quit giving away store rentals and raise your prices, we're going to start growing again.
There was a moment of tense silence as the two men weighed the stakes.
Well, what do you suggest? Antiocho said.
John, let us buy your subscribers. We are better at online rental. We are just better at technology.
There it was, Antiocho thought. Even with Netflix's imminent demise, Hastings couldn't resist one last dart, could he? His arrogance was not dimmed in the least. So Antiocho replied,
I had something else in mind. I want to keep the stores and the online business, but maybe there's a way for us to be partners, maybe in a joint venture.
To which Hastings replied,
This is not even a business you wanted to be in, John.
Okay, stop right here for a moment. Now you're Antiocho, and Hastings, well, Hastings has just made a Hail Mary move to buy your subscriber base from Blockbuster. So Antiocho's thinking, wow, the hundreds of millions I've spent, the barbs I've taken from Wall Street, from Icon, from my very own board, from this Hastings fella, all that is about to pay off. I've got Hastings right where I want him. And what was that Hastings just said? This is not even a business you want to be in, John? You can imagine John Antiocho looking down at the carpet as a slow smile begins to creep across his face.
I don't know about that, Hastings. I think we're doing all right.
Antiocho agreed to bring the proposal to Icon and the board. He got up to leave with a sense of exultation. He knew they would show no mercy. On the next episode of Business Wars, Netflix and Blockbuster land near fatal blows on each other, while Antiocho battles against his own board.
The stock has lost almost half its value in 3 years, and you barely posted a profit last year. And you think you're entitled to this kind of compensation?
I hope you enjoyed this first episode of Business Wars.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I'm your host, David Brown. Gina Keating, author of the book Netflixed, wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Sound design by Jeff Schmidt. Our executive producers are Hernan Lopez and Ben Adair for Wondery.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.